There is a Garden of Eden. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. There is a Garden of Eden. Now, let me sort of amuse this, because we think these stories of the Old Testament are our fable, our fabric, are not real, but yet there is a Garden of Eden. They are all symbols of something very beautiful, these stories. And there is a Garden of Eden. There is in our consciousness a place where everything positive, joyous, and good exists. There is in our consciousness a place where everything that we could ever desire exists and is ours now, a place where every experience we could ever want in our life is and it is now. Now, we think up in the morning, out on the job, I gotta work for my pay, but that lucky old son, he's got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Now that's us. We've got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. Now if we want to stay in a heavenly consciousness, we can have heavenly experiences. Now it's not a matter of nothing to do, because roll around heaven all day is quite a busy time, quite a busy task. Think about it. As I walked the path this morning, I noticed tracks on the path where something had been very startled and something jumped in and maybe caught a rabbit, maybe it was a coyote, maybe it was a wolf, maybe it was a bear, maybe it was a bobcat or a lion, and they caught this little creature and had breakfast. And the little creature just gave up his life for that guy's breakfast and said, yes, here I am, I'm your breakfast, you know. Animals have to go and search for their food. You think, oh, isn't the life in the wild beautiful? It's so natural and so lovely. And it is. But animals have to go and search for their food. Yeah. We think that an animal taking another animal's life for its food is kind of tough. But it's just a way of nature. And that's not true. The way of divine nature is to eat the seeds of the grass, the seeds of the field, the seeds of the trees, to eat the fruit. This is what was divinely given us, and the animals eat that too. But you say, look at their teeth. They're made carnivorous, you know. They're not omnivorous, you know, and they're whatever, you know. Well, are they? What has happened through time is a mutation of man's attitude toward himself, of animals' attitude toward themselves, of creating themselves in this form. Well, look at in prehistoric times how these Tyrannosaurus rex and so forth with their terrible teeth and their animal-eating animals, you know, their flesh-eating creatures, their teeth are built to rip apart things. That's right. That's right. How many times has the world been created? How many times has life been brought forth on the planet Earth? How many times have we in our omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence as God brought forth life to represent different symbols that pleased us to represent them? Now, do you enjoy seeing two dogs bouncing around, playing with each other, having a good time? That's lovely. You enjoy that. You created that. You are the creator of those dogs joyously romping around, enjoying. When you see two dogs tearing at each other, ripping at each other, angry with each other, you created that. Are there people in the world today who have a rather angry attitude toward life? Yes. And those people are the ones who create the world with a rather angry attitude toward self. Now, can we return to the days of yesteryear, where there was peace on earth? Yes, because it does exist. We can, in our consciousness, begin to look at the Garden of Eden and take the symbol of the Garden of Eden, where man neither need toil nor strain nor feel any pain. He just enjoys a life of magnificence in every possible way. Now, why did the early writers in the Old Testament have the story of the Garden of Eden as the beginning? First, they had the story of God creating all things. And of course, we all know who God is. God is you and I and all. All is God. Okay. So the early writers have the New Testament being, Old Testament being created with God bringing forth all life in a rather spectacular and in a rather amazing way. No evil. No evil whatsoever. No unhappiness. Life eternal. Life immortal. Then, second chapter, man begins to misbehave. Now, why would God create man and then create him misbehaving? All right, why do you create your dog not behaving properly? Because you have forgotten who you are. You're God, and you created your dogs to be your pets. You didn't create them to be your savior. You didn't create them to be your protector. But the minute you start thinking you need protection from something, and you create your dog as a wild beast to scare away other people, that you're going to take your jogging in the morning, so you're going to take your wolfhound along, you're going to take your protector along, well, you're going to need it. I tell you, all these people who study karate and all these things to protect themselves, they're going to need it because they're creating that in their world. Now, the second chapter, the second book of Genesis, goes into all of these nonsensical things. And we are living that today. I tell you, go back to your first thought, and you say, hey, 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 how are you going to go back to your first thought? Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Well, you go back to your first thought by going back to the first chapter of Genesis. You know? It's pure and good and beautiful, and everything was divinely created, and God called everything good and very good. You have a good symbol there. You have a good symbol. Now, we try to find fault in ourselves. We try to find fault in the world. We try to look at each other and find fault. Well, on the internet this morning, I read an interesting series of statements here. I'd like to share them with you. Susan, what's her name? Susan Friedman. She has this from the Philippines, a rather excellent lady. And she said, from Plutarch, to find fault is easy. To do better may be difficult. How often have you heard the question asked, who is to blame? Blame is an ineffective waste of our lives. Assigning blame has nothing to do with responsibility or integrity. We all make mistakes from time to time, or we fail in our attempts to accomplish some goal. Still, it doesn't set our mistakes or failures a right to assign blame. Worrying about who is to blame is like spinning your tires in the mud after you've gotten stuck. It doesn't move the car away from the problem to a place where you would like to be, and it makes one heck of a lot of noise and rarely succeeds at unsticking the car. She might add in there, it splatters the mud all over everything too. Ernest Holmes wrote in Words That Heal Today that if we can believe in inner integrity, an inward security of which no man can rob us, then instead of putting on sackcloth and ashes and spending our time lamenting, we shall anoint our heads with the oil of peace, don the robe of confidence, and wear the shoes of gladness. She says, I don't know about you, but I'm looking for a nice pair of size 9s in a fashionable shade of red. Sounds like Ellen. So far, life is naturally challenging enough without me dramatizing and building more sorrow and suffering into the mix. And another quote, when you plant lettuce, if it does not grow well, You don't blame the lettuce. You look into the reasons it is not doing well. It may need fertilizer, or more water, or less sun. You never blame the lettuce. Yet, if we have problems with our friends or family, we blame the other person. But if we know how to take care of them, they will grow well like lettuce. Blaming has no positive effect at all, nor does trying to persuade using reason and arguments. See, there we go with that. No reasons, no arguments, no logic. That is my experience. No blame, no reasoning, no argument, just understanding. If you understand, and you show that you understand, you can love, and the situation will change. And this came from THICHNHATHANH, however you pronounce that. And she asks, affirm with me, today I renew my resolve to let Spirit lead my life, knowing that change is inevitable. I embrace the idea of living my true life, my life true to myself and my own central beliefs. Today I resolve to open to the new infinite possibilities that are mine, and to eliminate blame from my life. You see, there is a Garden of Eden. But have we prepared ourselves to be in the Garden of Eden? Every time we blame somebody for our own lack of understanding, every time we look for problems rather than solutions, we are stepping outside of the Garden of Eden. We are stepping outside of the condition where all exists right now for us, for every desire of our heart. The relative man can live the most noble, glorious, and satisfying life on the face of the earth if we want to. But if we want to, we can teach our dogs to fight. We can teach our dogs to protect us. We can teach our dogs to be mean and hateful, love only us, you know. Or we can teach our pets to be pure love, just like we are. We can teach our pets to behave just like we do. We can teach our pets to be mannerly, just like we are mannerly. We can teach our pets to be fabulous, just like we're fabulous. Or we can teach them to be limited, whatever is our choice. Now, what do you want for your life? Do you want to live in the Garden of Eden? Do you want to live where all is in divine order? My God, what a wonderful idea. All is in divine order. All is in divine order. All is in divine order. Living in a place and a time and a circumstance where all is in divine order, what would happen to us? What would happen to us if we were living in a circumstance, in a world, in a condition where all is in divine order? We would be living in the Garden of Eden. We'd be living in paradise. We'd be living in love. We would not have one bad thought in our mind about ourselves. And Ingeborg, when we go to the doctor, the doctor would just give us the perfect report, wouldn't he? And we go to the doctor because the doctor is going to say, yes, you are whole and perfect. And the day will come when we do not need that confirmation. We don't have to go to the doctor to know we're whole and perfect. And then when we know we're whole and perfect and we go to the doctor and he says we're whole and perfect, that's natural. Soon the doctor would be out of business like the Iceman's out of business, you know. But hey, that's okay. That's okay. The doctors are brilliant people, and they would surely find another area where they could use their genius. And they do. And they do. Do you know that many of the universities take their top scholars and pay them just to think? Many organizations, many industries take brilliant men and women and put them in think tanks and say, just think. Think of ways to accomplish goals for our organization. They're paid tremendous salaries, more than maybe even the president, but they're paid tremendous salaries because they want them to think. Now, isn't this the ideal use of our beingness? That we think only of solutions, only of new creative ideas. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if Edison could have just been a thinker? Wouldn't it be wonderful if Mark, my son, could just be a thinker and someone would just pay him to think and create these beautiful ideas, and then the company carries it out? Mark merely comes up with all of the genius ideas that are in his mind. He's got so many. And develop that engine that is pollution-free, and he has it done. And it's just now a matter of getting the finishing touches on it. He has this ultralight airplanes, and every year, virtually, or more than that, he's coming up with improvements and ideas. Wouldn't it be wonderful if he had some manufacturing company just give his ideas to it and let them do it? All he does is think. And what a wonderful way to be. What a wonderful way to be. He didn't create himself in the flow of these large manufacturing companies who do this, because there's one little scam idea that flows into this, and that is some inventors think these major companies who buy their inventions are going to sit on them, are just going to put them on a back burner because they want to keep the things that they're working on the front burner. Could you imagine what would happen to the auto industry if automobiles were developed, engines were developed that used only water? My goodness, the hydrogen burning operations are similar to that, but even that is difficult because we have not created a way to efficiently bring forth hydrogen in great amounts to use by hydrogen-operated cars. Now, there were people who many years ago invented the idea of using water and gasoline in combination and using far less gasoline. There are gasoline engines today that get 100 miles to a gallon and maybe more, but they're not publicized. How do they do this? How do they do? That's not the question. The question is that they do this, but they're being sat on. Because right now, the companies are making more money in not having that be available. Just imagine, if the engine were developed that could produce 100 miles to a gallon, and then the government said, every car must have that engine in it. Why? The remake by the auto industry of the engine-producing companies would be absolutely fantastic. It'd be costly. And then they wouldn't get as much benefit because the engines would be more sophisticated. The engines would run on less gas. The engines would run longer because they're not having to work so hard because they can do far better. Mark's engines are utterly fantastic. The things that he has done have proven that you don't have to have the engine do this work. It's how the engine is taught to use it. It's his camshaft, gear shaft, and all these things that he's got inside of there that are working in a strange, oscillating way. But perfectly harmonious, perfectly smooth, and no wear tear. It's merely that it's being directed to do whatever it's being directed to do. Now, Mark's living pretty much in the Garden of Eden and doing wonderful things. Now, can you live in the Garden of Eden? Can you do these wonderful things? Can you accomplish these wonderful goals for yourself? Can it be done today? And the answer is yes. And are you ready to do it? And the answer is yes. Are you ready to stop training your dogs to be guard dogs and training your dogs to be lovers? Are you ready to train yourself to be a lover? Are you ready to train yourself to be good and very good as you're created out of the infinite reality in the beginning? If you're ready for that, then the Garden of Eden it stands open before you. If you're not ready for that, the Garden of Eden has its doors closed to you, because the Garden of Eden does not include inharmony, unhappiness, problems. The Garden of Eden only is open to purity of heart, soul, and being. So join with me this day, walking into the Garden of Eden and having the time of your life. And by the way, you'll meet all your friends there too. I love you. I love you. I love you.